Chapter 9. How do we influence each other? Social psychology. The previous chapters have concentrated on the individual. However, human behavior can only be properly understood if it is thought of as social in nature, as being directly or indirectly influenced by the behavior of others. Simply being in the presence of others will normally affect our behavior. You may do things when you are alone at home that you would not dream of doing in public. Psychologists call this process of behavior change as a result of being in the presence of others social facilitation. One obvious form of social facilitation is competition. In general, people's performance is enhanced if they believe that they are competing with someone else, even if there is no prize. It seems that the mere presence of others, rather than the atmosphere of competition, is the crucial element. Even when people are asked not to compete, they work faster when they can see others working, the coaction effect, or when they are being observed by others, the audience effect. Experiments have shown that social facilitation can be produced by simply telling subjects that others are performing the same task elsewhere. Hence, your motivation to study for an exam may be increased by telephoning a classmate and finding out that they are already hard at it. Whether or not social facilitation enhances performance depends upon the nature of the task. If the task is simple and well-learned, performance may improve, but it may deteriorate if the task is complex, novel, or difficult. Social facilitation has been demonstrated in animals, too. Even cockroaches run faster when they are being watched by their peers. A more direct form of social influence involves not merely being in the presence of other people, but interacting with them and making some attempt to change their behavior. This could happen when someone tries to influence the group as a whole, leadership, when several group members encourage others to adopt a particular attitude, conformity, when an authority figure tries to make someone comply with their demands, obedience, or when the attitudes of one group influence behavior towards another group, prejudice. This chapter will focus on these four issues as examples of social psychology. A born leader? It was originally thought that leadership was a trait that some people possessed and others did not. Hence, comments such as, "He's a born leader." A number of attributes, such as height, weight, intelligence, confidence, and an attractive appearance, have been proposed as being related to leadership, at least in men. With regard to intelligence, several studies have shown that the typical leader is only slightly more intelligent than the average group member. But in general, psychologists have been unable to find many attributes that consistently distinguish leaders from non-leaders. This may explain why we can all think of leaders who, for example, are not particularly attractive. Because specific leadership traits are not demonstrable, psychologists have explored other possibilities. First, leadership style has been shown to influence the behavior and productivity of group members. In general, a democratic style promotes good productivity with the best relationships between group members. An autocratic style, which is more authoritarian and directive, and allows group members less say in decisions, produces as much productivity, provided the leader is present, but tends to lead to poorer relationships and less cooperation between group members. Laissez-faire leadership, which leaves the group to its own devices, results in much less productivity than either a democratic or authoritarian approach. The results of these studies have influenced the development of management strategies in many organizations, encouraging a move away from authoritarian models of management towards the more democratic process of allowing workers to have a say in the running of the organization. Psychologists have also investigated the situational aspects of leadership, suggesting that leadership is primarily determined by the functions that the group needs a leader to fulfill. Thus, the match between the leader's personal qualities or leadership style and the requirements of the situation is crucial. There is some evidence to support this notion. For example, relationship-oriented leadership is more productive when conditions for the group are neither extremely good nor extremely bad. In contrast, task-oriented leadership, which is directive and controlling, produces greater benefits when the group's conditions are more extreme, either extremely favorable or extremely unfavorable. This may help to account for the increased popularity of dictators as leaders in countries that are experiencing times of extreme hardship. For example, Hitler became popular as Germany was struggling under the weight of reparations after losing the First World War. In order to find out more about situational influences on leadership, some researchers have studied the effects of putting a random person in a central position. Experiments have shown that if members of a group are forced to communicate only through one central person, then that person begins to function as a leader. Compared with people occupying more peripheral positions, people in central positions send more messages, solve problems faster, make fewer errors, and are more satisfied with their own and the group's efforts. People put in positions of leadership tend to accept the challenge, behave like leaders, and be recognized by others as leaders. This may explain why people who do not appear to be natural leaders can nevertheless rise to the occasion. As Shakespeare said in Twelfth Night, Act 2, "Some men are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them." Thus, the qualities that make a good leader vary according to the situation and the nature of the problem faced by the members of the group in question. Conformity. Understanding leadership helps to explain the effect of an individual on a group, but the effects of a group on an individual are also more complex than might be supposed. You may have been in a group situation where your opinion differs from the majority. In such circumstances, you might change your opinion to conform with the group, particularly if you are not sure of your own opinion, or if you have reason to believe that the majority has a more valid source of information. However, what if you are sure that you are correct and the group is incorrect? Would you yield to social pressure and conform? Changing one's behavior or attitudes as a result of perceived pressure from a person or group of people is called conformity. You may have noticed that if several people have already given the same answer to a question, the last person is unlikely to disagree. Hence, a hung jury is a fairly rare occurrence. Conformity has been studied in experiments in which a person is asked to answer a simple question after they have already heard several others give the same wrong answer. It is important that the real subject believes that the other people are answering honestly. Results show that people conform, that is, give the same wrong answer, about 30% of the time. Why do people do this? It seems that there are several reasons why people change their opinions or behavior as a result of group pressure. In one experiment, photographs were taken of a group of seven men, all except one being Confederates previously instructed to give uniformly wrong answers on 12 of the 18 trials. Number 6, who has been told he is participating in an experiment in visual judgment, therefore finds himself a lone dissenter when he gives the correct answers. In one of the photographs, the subject, showing the strain of repeated disagreement with the majority, leans forward anxiously to look at the pair of cards. Unusually, this subject persists in his opinion, saying that he has to call them as he sees them. Some people who conformed in these experiments admitted to knowing that they had given an incorrect answer, but gave it because they did not want to appear to be the odd one out, or feared that people would laugh at them, or that they would disrupt the experiment if they did not conform. Others appeared to have internalized the group's opinion, and thus did not realize that they had been influenced by others. This type of conformity, in which the influence of others remains unrecognized, is more common when the task is difficult, or when the other people are perceived as more competent. For example, your opinion about the date of the next election is likely to be influenced more by hearing a group of politicians say that it will be in April, rather than hearing a group of shopkeepers say so. Obedience. Conformity occurs when someone yields to group pressure. Similar effects can be produced by an authority figure, and complying with the demands of an authority figure is called obedience. Scientific investigations into obedience were prompted by atrocities of war, such as the Holocaust or the killing of Vietnamese civilians at My Lai. In the aftermath of these wars, it became apparent that many soldiers, who appeared to be ordinary, decent people, had committed atrocious acts. When asked why they had done these things, a common defense was, "I was following orders." Thus, psychologists became interested in just how far the average person would go, simply because they were told to. In one experiment in 1974, members of the public, recruited through a newspaper, participated in a study of memory. Subjects were told that they would play the role of teacher and would be teaching a series of word pairs to a learner. Teachers were instructed to press a lever to deliver an electric shock to the learner for every error made. Teachers saw the learner being strapped into an electrically wired chair with an electrode placed on the wrist, and were convinced of the generator's authenticity by being given a sample shock of 45 volts. Then, seated in front of the generator with 30 switches ranging from 15 volts, mild shock, to 450 volts, danger, severe shock, teachers were told to move up a level for each error made. The experimenter remained in the room throughout. In reality, the learner was an actor who did not receive shocks, but who had been trained to respond as if he did, and briefed to make many errors. As the shocks became stronger, the actor began to shout and curse. At the level marked extreme intensity shock, the actor went quiet and no longer answered questions. Not surprisingly, many of the subjects objected and asked to stop the experiment. The experimenter instructed them to continue. A staggering 65% of the subjects continued right to the end of the shock series, 450 volts, and none stopped before 300 volts, when the actor began to kick the adjoining wall. The results of this experiment suggest that ordinary people will go very far indeed when they are told to by someone in a position of authority. What produces such obedience? One suggestion is that obedience to authority is vital for communal life and may have been built into our genetic makeup during evolution. Indeed, many aspects of civilized life, such as the legal, military, and school systems, rely on people obeying the directions of authority figures. However, psychological factors may also influence obedience. Social norms, such as being polite, may have contributed to making it difficult for the subjects to refuse to continue, particularly once they had started. Refusing to continue would have meant admitting that what they had already been doing was wrong, and could imply that they thought badly of the experimenter. This may make it easier to understand why so few people disobey orders during war, when punishments for disobedience are more serious than merely offending someone. The presence of the experimenter also increased obedience. When instructions were issued by telephone, obedience dropped from 65% to 21%. Furthermore, several people cheated by giving weaker shocks. So obedience is at least partly dependent upon continued surveillance. Two other factors, which are also relevant to the obedience seen during wars, affected obedience in these experiments. First, people are more prepared to inflict pain on another person if they can distance themselves from the victim. If the teacher had to respond to errors by forcing the learner's hand down onto a shock plate, obedience was much lower than when the teacher did not have to see or touch the learner. This has parallels with modern warfare, in which it is now possible to kill at the touch of a button without ever having to see the victim's suffering. Indeed, it is psychologically easier to kill millions with a nuclear bomb than to kill one person face to face. Second, believing the violence to be a means to an end in a worthy cause or ideological justification affects obedience. In the experiments, people thought that they were acting in the interests of scientific research. When the experiment was repeated without the associations of a prestigious university, fewer people were prepared to obey the instructions. Similarly, in war, many soldiers supposedly believe that following orders will be for the greater good of their countrymen, and their training involves cultivating attitudes that facilitate aggressive acts, often by dehumanizing the enemy. When asked in advance, most people are adamant that they would not conform or obey instructions to deliver such electric shocks. The fact that most people do indeed conform or obey suggests that we are not good at predicting our own behavior. This discrepancy between what we think we would do and what we actually do is a good example of our tendency to overestimate the importance of personality factors and underestimate the importance of situational influences. This is the fundamental attribution error. While obedience and conformity may not be seen as very desirable, they clearly contribute to the cohesiveness that enables us to live in a civilized society. For example, there could be no law enforcement without obedience, and no democracy without some conformity. Prejudice. In addition to looking at the influences of groups on individuals, social psychology is also concerned with the influences of one group on another group. The Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes experiment from 1980 shows how belonging to a particular group can change one's behavior. Pupils were told by their teacher that those with brown eyes were more intelligent and better people. The teacher then gave the brown-eyed children special privileges, such as sitting at the front of the class. Behavior in both groups changed. The blue-eyed children showed signs of lowered self-esteem and depressed mood, and did less well in their work, while the brown-eyed children became critical and oppressive towards their inferiors. After a few days, when the teacher said that she had made a mistake and the blue-eyed children were the superior ones, the behavior patterns quickly reversed, with the brown-eyed children becoming more depressed. Of course, the rationale for the study was explained to the children once it was over. Despite its artificiality, this experiment has many implications for prejudice in the real world. Prejudices are relatively enduring, usually negative, attitudes about a group that are extended towards members of that group. Prejudice often involves stereotyping. Stereotyping is the tendency to categorize people according to some readily identifiable characteristics, such as age, race, sex, or occupation, and then to attribute to the individual the characteristics that are supposedly typical of members of that group. For example, someone who is prejudiced against women may believe that women are stupid and weak, and they will apply this belief to every woman they encounter. While the stereotypes involved in prejudices may contain a grain of truth, for example, on average, women are physically weaker than men. They are frequently overly general, some women are stronger than some men, overly rigid, not all women are weak or stupid, or simply inaccurate. There is no evidence that women are less intelligent than men. Many forms of prejudice have been demonstrated in different groups across the world, and social psychologists have investigated the psychological factors underlying them. Again, it seems that both personality factors and situational influences contribute to the development of prejudices. The Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes experiment suggested that prejudice can be created simply by giving one group privileges over another. Similarly, when two groups are set up in competition for the same resources, prejudice easily develops, as in the Robbers Cave experiment. In this study of cooperative behavior at a summer camp in 1961, 22 11-year-old boys participated. In stage one, the boys were divided into two groups without knowing of each other's existence. Each group chose a name, the Rattlers and the Eagles, and formed a group identity by wearing caps and t-shirts showing their names. Each group engaged in cooperative activities and developed standards of group behavior, such as swimming in the nude or not mentioning homesickness. In stage two, an element of competition was introduced. The groups became aware of each other and competed for prizes in a grand tournament. Conflict quickly developed with each group attacking the other after losing a round of the competition. Stage three was conflict resolution through cooperative activities. These activities involved goals that both groups wanted, but could only be achieved through cooperation. For example, pooling funds to rent a minibus. This succeeded in eliminating prejudices against members of the other group and towards members of their own group. Several sources of evidence show that competition for resources can lead to prejudice. For example, the number of racially motivated lynchings in the southern states of the USA is said to have increased with financial hardship and decreased in more prosperous years. Prejudice might also arise out of a general need to see oneself positively. People come to see any groups to which they belong more positively than other groups. In this manner, they develop positive prejudices about their own groups and negative prejudices about other groups. This is called ethnocentrism. It has also been suggested that prejudice is a form of scapegoating, in which aggression is directed towards a scapegoat, usually a socially approved or legitimized target, because it is not possible to direct one's aggression toward the real target, for fear of the consequences or because they are not accessible. Situational factors clearly influence the development of prejudices. However, several studies have found that people who hold prejudices tend to have certain personality characteristics, such as being less flexible and more authoritarian. This relationship between personality characteristics and the tendency to develop prejudices may help to explain why two people who have had similar experiences can have differing levels of prejudice. Psychologists have used their knowledge about the psychological factors involved in prejudice to look at methods for reducing prejudice. Initially, it was thought that increased contact and decreased segregation would help. The absence of direct contact with another group leads to autistic hostility. Ignorance of another group produces a failure to understand the reasons for their actions and provides no opportunities to find out if negative interpretations of their behavior are incorrect. Thus, contact between opposing groups is needed before prejudices can be reduced. However, contact based on inequity, as when male bosses employ female secretaries or cleaners, may serve to reinforce stereotypes. Furthermore, because inequity and competition for scarce resources facilitate the development of prejudice, contact to reduce prejudice should be based on equality and encourage the pursuit of common goals rather than competition. We have looked at social facilitation, leadership, conformity, obedience, and prejudice, and have been able to see that our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors are influenced by others. What can be concluded from these studies, and what use are these conclusions? Studies of social facilitation and leadership suggest that certain working conditions can enhance workers' productivity and satisfaction, and this information has been useful to employers. Studies of obedience and conformity show that we are much more likely to be influenced by pressure from others than we realize, and they provide a framework for understanding why we are susceptible to such pressures. Greater understanding of the factors contributing to obedience and conformity has been useful both in situations where conformity and obedience are desirable, such as in the military forces, and in situations where it is important that people stay true to their own opinions. For example, some American states now use juries of 6 rather than 12, as social psychologists' findings suggest that smaller groups are less likely to produce undue pressure to conform. The psychological study of prejudice has identified some of the underlying factors and facilitated the development of more effective programs to reduce prejudice and conflict between different groups. This chapter has introduced some of the issues that social psychologists are interested in and some of the methods they use to investigate them. Many interesting areas of social psychology have not been covered here, such as group dynamics, bystander intervention, behavior of crowds, impression formation, and interpersonal attraction. Both antisocial behavior, such as football hooliganism, and prosocial behavior, such as acts of altruism, are of interest. The major challenge for the future of social psychology is to find out more about the many factors that help to predict, control, or modify, increase, or decrease both types of behavior.